This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and thank you for joining us on our Main Street all across North Dakota this time of day. As we walk those main streets, we say hello to our friends and neighbors, you know, marvel at the new store that might be opening downtown, and, you know, take in all the pets that we see, because there are dogs and cats and other pets around. And we're going to talk about one particular pet today with somebody who was very taken with this animal, a dog. Catherine Pendergast joins us from our studio in Bismarck, and Ashley Thornburg is with me in Fargo. Catherine joins us to talk about her brand new book, her first children's book, Pickles the Dog, adopted in North Dakota.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You write under pen name. I almost said pet name. You write under the pen name Cat Socks. So before we get into the book, I just got to know, how'd you pick this name?
So I have a business called Cat Socks, and I make little baby shoes, little soft sole baby shoes, and I thought it would be really fun if I could incorporate animals into what I was doing. So I have little animals around town that are my designers. And so I thought that would just be a fun way to incorporate them. I donate a small portion of my sales to animal shelters. And so I kind of started doing that. And then I decided to write a book. And actually, Pickles is one of the designers of my line. So I kind of had a little history with her there, and I just thought, Cat Socks, why not keep that name?
So are these the kind of socks that are knitted?
No, they're sewn. So they're handmade Pride of Dakota product.
So you've got lots of Pride of Dakota opportunities coming up, I
do, yeah.
Well, who's Pickles?
Yeah. So Pickles is... that's her real name. And she was originally a flood dog from Minot. And she just kept getting returned, unfortunately. And so the Humane Society in Mandan took her in, and my mother-in-law adopted her. And it turns out she's just the sweetest dog. So she just really needed the right family.
Well, the right family ended up being you, but you're a ways from Minot. How did Pickles get to where you are?
So the Humane Society in Mandan took her in, and my mother-in-law adopted her, and she lives in Bismarck as well. So that's where Pickles lives at the moment. And so in the story, what I did was I had Pickles. She goes to a family that lives on a family farm in North Dakota, and Pickles has never been to a farm before, so she ends up doing a few naughty things, and Cat kind of thinks, man, this is going to be tough, and she has a conversation with her mom, and her mom doesn't tell her what to do. She just says, maybe try something tomorrow, something different. And so trying to give our children the opportunity to think for themselves and maybe think through the whole process of a problem and impossible solutions. So the next day she decides to bring a squeaky toy with and uses a simple training technique of redirection with Pickles. So when Pickles is going to run right into the mud, before she does that, she squeaks the toy, and Pickles turns and looks to her, grabs her attention, and then is able to praise her for not doing the naughty things. And so it's a great training technique for dogs as well.
Well, in the book, it's a squeaky pickle.
It is.
So is that how Pickles got her name?
No, actually, so Pickles got her name. My father-in-law, he was kayaking down the Missouri River, and there was a dog that was also kayaking with his family. And then my mother-in-law brought home Pickles, and it looked just like the same dog that he had saw on his kayaking trip. So that's how she ended up with that name.
Now, you did not grow up with any pets, but now you write about pets, and the animals that you help are with lots of different animal shelters, and you have, what, 5, 6, 7 dogs now. When did you become a dog person?
Well, I've always been a dog person, and growing up, I always wanted a dog, and I wasn't able to. So as an adult, that was definitely on my list. So,
well, the book is beautifully illustrated. Tell us about Ben Brick.
So Ben Brick, he is actually from Bismarck as well, and it was amazing that we found each other, and I couldn't have asked for anything better. It turned out beyond anything I ever imagined. He just nailed every single page. I don't think we even had any changes after everything was done. I just looked at it, and I thought, wow, this is amazing. So his creativity, his style, I love his hardline style. It's just very unique and wonderful, so I love it.
Yeah, it is definitely a very charming book between the words and the illustrations. Your writing process. People think writing kids' books is easy, and that's not true.
So what I did was I had certain things that I really wanted to incorporate in the book. One was kind of giving our children a little bit empowerment of thinking for themselves, not always the parent just telling them, this is how you fix your problem and go do it. But, you know, kind of figure out what you can do on your own. And I also wanted to have the main character be a female. And then I also wanted to incorporate a small training technique in there. When my son was, before he could even walk or talk, he had realized what that meant, redirecting attention towards something else with our dog. So I thought it was really interesting that he could pick up on that at such a young age. So I felt like children could understand that concept as well. So those were kind of the things I wanted to incorporate. I put a lot of thought into the setting and what would happen on each page. And so I kind of created an outline of everything that I wanted in the book and then kind of broke down a little bit further. So ultimately, in the end, the actual words that were written on each page really didn't take that long. It was more what I wanted to get across and what I wanted to incorporate in the book. And then when I met with the illustrator, we went through every single page and what I wanted to incorporate. And almost like the feeling that I wanted to portray in each page. So he would know if that person should be happy or sad, or if the dog should look happy or ashamed, or what we wanted each person and animal to look like too. So that was kind of how we did the process. And then we created a couple sketches to make sure that I was on board with the first part of the illustrations, and then we just kept moving forward from there, and then ultimately we had an entire book put together. So it took about a year for us to get, well, for me to get the whole process done, from having the idea, finding an illustrator, and I self-published too, so that took a little bit of work as well.
And how old is the child you were writing for?
So the book is really for anyone ages 0 to 12.
Now, why did you choose to adopt a pet? I mean, we understand why you chose to write about it, but why did you personally choose to adopt one?
I always kind of, growing up, I didn't have exposure to animals, and so later on in life, I really didn't know anything about shelters or animals. My mother-in-law had adopted some really tough cases, and I thought, man, these are tough cases when they're just wonderful dogs. So that was my first exposure with animals. So.
Well, what did you know about the animal you chose, Pickles?
Well, Pickles is my mother-in-law's dog.
So, oh, I see. That's the one she chose.
Yep. Okay. And I think she probably chose her because she has the ability to help animals out, I think, on a little bit different level than maybe the average person. Just knowledge of training and you know, if they do have tough cases. She has one animal that was from, I guess, a puppy mill situation. And so that dog, unfortunately, had never been out of a crate in his entire life. Mm. So she had to teach him how to go upstairs, how to go through a door, how to do all of those things. So, you know, she's definitely a special person.
You mentioned that Pickles was a flood dog and difficult to adopt out, kept mm-hmm. kind of coming back to that shelter. Do you have a sense of why that was?
Well, I think she was still kind of a puppy, and she liked to chew on things, like a puppy would. And so I'm assuming she probably chewed up some pretty expensive things, possibly. I really don't know. It was almost surprising because she is such a sweet dog.
There are a lot of dogs that do sometimes have trouble getting adopted, and sometimes it's breed specific. People tend to be sort of scared of a pit bull. I've often mm-hmm. heard too that even the color of the dog can make them difficult to adopt. What advice do you have for people who are maybe going into the adoption process and just won't take a look at a certain kind or mm-hmm. color or age or what have you of a dog?
Well, you know, just looks. There's a lot more to an animal, and honestly, anyone that you've ever met in your life, even your own family members, would you say that you'd love them more if they had a certain color hair, or if they, you know, were X amount of inches tall, or something like that? You know, you would say, no, I love them just how they are. And so I think with animals, too, once you get to know them, it doesn't matter what breed or what they look like and things like that. So,
well, you also volunteer as a pet therapy handler. What does that entail?
So I have a dog that we go into a facility and we work with children, and basically she goes in there and they just pet her, and we'll do tricks and treats and things like that. And the idea is that it's kind of a calming process and kind of gets their mind off of other things that might be going on in their life too. So it's kind of almost like a therapy session. I mean, that's what it's all about. And to do that certification, I went through a process of training and exams and then some volunteer hours and then a final exam. And then she became fully certified. So it did take a while. I think I had her certified in about a year, but most people could probably do it a little bit quicker. I'm have a lot going on, so it took me a little bit longer probably than most people, but she just loves it, and it's a great thing.
There's this great question that I hear every once in a while that is in animal rescue and animal adoption circles, and it's, who rescued whom? What did you learn about yourself coexisting with a dog and becoming a therapy handler?
I think probably just being patient and letting the dogs do what they're great at doing. They're wonderful at looking at you and being so excited to just have a little attention. I mean, it's just unbelievable how happy she is after going to a session. So,
well, let's talk about this process of self-publishing. What did you learn about the business that you didn't know before?
Well, it was a process. I decided to self-publish, and I'm very glad I did. And it took a little while to figure out all the pieces and how they all fit together, how to figure out the printer, how to get the book formatted, what size. I wanted a book that was hardcover with a jacket and has a foil on the title and the spine. And I had a very specific vision of what I wanted the book to look like in the end, and I'm very happy with how it turned out.
And how can people get the book?
So in Bismarck, it's available at Market West. In Mandan, it's available at CDHS. And it is available at Plaza Drug, Lily Valley Baby, and Barnes & Noble.
So it's widely available. You had a book launch party earlier this week. How did that go?
It went great. I had a launch party on Monday, and it was down at Saratoma Park, and it was great. It was wonderful to visit with people in the community and friends and family, and Pickles made a special appearance to that. So it was great to see her. The illustrator was also there as well. And I guess in Minot, the book would be available at Main Street Books and Barnes & Noble. In Fargo, it's available at Sweet Dreams Confections, Zambros, and The Zoo. And then also at Barnes & Noble and in Bismarck, the zoo, it is available there too.
Catherine Pendergast is the author of Pickles the Dog, Adopted in North Dakota, and the creator of Cat's Socks. Thanks for joining us, Kat.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Coming up on Main Street, a story from NPR about a creative approach for prisoners in North Dakota.
Support is provided by Cable One High-Speed Internet. Designed to offer a streaming connection that allows customers to watch movies and videos without buffering or interruption. More information at 1-855-CABLE-1.
He asked me out, and I have to say yes, because guess why? Ends up he had been driving around the block for a month waiting for me to come out, and nothing says love like stalking.
Join us next time for the Moth Radio Hour, True Stories Told Live. From the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Tonight at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, here on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. A few weeks ago, we talked with NPR Midwest correspondent Cheryl Corley about a story she came to North Dakota to cover, prison reform. Corley recently filed her story, which aired on Morning Edition. Here is her report about how North Dakota prison officials have changed one of the most controversial prison practices, solitary confinement.
Solitary confinement goes by many names: the hole, segregation, the SHU for special housing unit. Whatever the name, its design purpose was to punish disruptive inmates who broke rules and to keep the prison safe by removing them from the general population. As the gate opens at the prison in Bismarck, Chief of Security Joe Charvet walks over to the west wing.
In this area, we used to house our administrative segregation unit, which has now since been moved to another area.
That's their name for solitary confinement. Charvet says the solid metal doors of the cell were considered safer for staff, and there was little contact between corrections officers and those behind the doors. The penitentiary's warden, Colby Braun, says for years, North Dakota's isolation unit operated like many others.
It was 23 hours a day lockdown, so you had 1 hour of recreation a day to include your shower. That was 5 days a week. So on the weekends, you were generally locked down for 24 hours, and that means you're in your cell. You do not come out for any reason.
Now things are different. There's much more recreation time. Prisoners spend several hours learning new skills. They focus on changing their behavior. North Dakota's Director of Corrections and Rehabilitation, Leanne Birch, is behind the change. Her inspiration came after a trip to Norway organized by U.S. prison reform groups. Birch called it a defining moment and decided to speed up changes already in the works.
There's just such an overemphasis on punishment and punitiveness. You know, Norway talks about punishment that works. And when they mean it to work, it's to actually make society safer by getting people to be law-abiding individuals and desist from future reoffending.
So North Dakota prison officials met to figure out how to do that. Birch says they worked to define what would land people in segregated housing in the first place.
There was a lot of different behaviors that could get you in before, so we really narrowed it down.
They dropped minor infractions like talking back to a corrections officer and created a top 10 list of dangerous behaviors like serious assault, using a weapon, and murder. The new name for the prison segregated housing became Behavior Intervention Unit, or BIU. Clinical Director Dr. Lisa Peterson says the goal is to help people succeed after they leave. She says it was clear the old way wasn't working.
The idea that somebody's just going to sit there and think about what they did and magically know how to handle a situation differently in the future is not accurate.
The state penitentiary in Bismarck can house about 800 inmates. In late 2015, when North Dakota started making its change, there were 80 or 90 in isolation. On this day, there are only about 20. The people in the unit go through a mental health screening to determine in part whether they have any suicidal thoughts. They participate in group therapeutic sessions. They're taught skills, like how to cope with anger. As correctional officers make their rounds, they talk with inmates about how they're doing. Skill building and rapport building is big here.
102, Barb.
Warden Colby Braun walks into room 102, one of the empty cells in the solitary unit. It measures 7 feet by 13. The door has a long vertical window plus a slot for food. Inside, there's a metal toilet and sink, a metal bed, a small metal desk and seat. Here's where it gets different. There are several electrical outlets in the room. Some prisoners who own TVs or tablets are allowed to bring them in the cell. Another narrow vertical window lets in light from outside.
So when you get closer to the end of the wing, when a person looks out, they can actually see cars going by.
Medical groups have issued strong warnings about how prolonged isolation causes human damage, depression, anxiety, a loss of contact with reality, and suicide. The United Nations and other groups have called it torture and say in most cases solitary confinement should be banned. In North Dakota, the average stay for inmates, with some exceptions, is 30 to 45 days.
My name is Ole Silva.
A few years ago, a prison stabbing put Silva in the old solitary unit for about 6 months.
You're shut off from the world. You wait. You just sit there and wait.
Silva says it could get tense. Inmates would curse and try to destroy things. Correctional officers, he said, would ignore prisoners and not get things they needed.
Just tit for tat stuff, you know. That's not really the case, you know, a lot now, you know. It's like they reward you for being involved. You know, they don't let you sit back there no more and just basically dwell.
But changing the system was a hard sell. Some staff felt they'd be at risk. The violence would increase. Case manager David Rogenbach oversees the officers and the activities in the BIU. He used to be an officer in the old solitary unit and at first was skeptical about the change.
Kind of the mindset is, if you don't like being in prison, don't come. Don't commit a crime, don't come. You're here, well, tough cookies. I've really looked at that and what is that accomplishing?
Another staffer, Sergeant Franz Jean-Pierre, says now he gets to know the people in restricted housing on a more personal level, not just as some inmate locked up in a cell. He says the change has made a difference. In the past, he dealt with an incident on his shift at least 3 or 4 times a week.
And by an incident, I mean like someone trying to commit suicide or someone trying to flood their cell or being completely disorderly, stuff like that. We haven't had hardly any of that. So, I mean, everything's completely changed.
Corrections officials here admit that changing the prison solitary confinement policy may be less difficult in a state with a smaller and more homogeneous prison population and with fewer prison gangs. Even with the reform efforts, though, North Dakota officials say there are some prisoners too dangerous to eliminate segregated housing completely. Corrections Director Birch says, even so, prison has to be about providing an opportunity for change. So North Dakota's effort to use solitary confinement as little as possible and in a different way makes sense. Cheryl Corley, NPR News, Bismarck, North Dakota.
Coming up on Main Street, Mark Trahant offers a commentary about the Farm Bill. Sue Balcom drops by to talk about zucchini. And Ashley Thornburg and I look at our What's Happening calendar of things to do. First, the news with Todd.
Thank you, Doug. North Dakota will have a strong presence when it comes to the crafting of the next Farm Bill. Senators Heidi Heitkamp and John Hoeven have both been named Senate conferees, with Representative Kevin Cramer serving as one of 47 House negotiators.
Because Senator Hoeven and I are on the Ag Committee, we have full jurisdiction. Congressman Cramer's input will be limited on the conference committee, will be limited to those issues that are reflected in the committee that he serves on. For instance, crop insurance and Title I, those are not votable issues for him. But, you know, like every other member, whether you sit on the conference committee or not, we expect that we're going to be getting input from our other colleagues.
Senator Heitkamp says the 2014 Farm Bill was well received and there should be a number of provisions that get carried over.
A couple of those, I will tell you, is neither the House bill nor the Senate bill does anything to the sugar program. Neither the House bill nor the Senate bill does anything to crop insurance, to limit crop insurance based on AGI, adjusted gross income of the person getting help on paying for crop insurance.
Heitkamp says there are some House provisions that will need work, but at this point she has confidence a solid bill can be developed before the current law expires. A number of human cases in West Nile virus is now up to 4. Health officials say all the confirmed cases of the mosquito-borne disease have occurred in the eastern third of the state. Officials in Grand Forks and East Grand Forks are planning another ground attack tonight to combat the summer pests. Todd Hansen of the Grand Forks Health Department says mosquito numbers remain low, but the ones out there can be deadly.
Really, on a serious note, we really encourage people to take precautions to avoid mosquito bites. If you're going to be out when it's later, apply mosquito repellents, wear protective clothing, do whatever you have to do to avoid mosquito bites.
Hansen says they continue to have positive hits in pools containing the Culex tarsalis mosquitoes. That's the variety most commonly associated with West Nile virus. Since 2002, North Dakota has confirmed 22 deaths from West Nile. No charges will be filed against officers involved in a fatal shooting in Grand Forks last month. Jordan Dries and Officer Michael Ruitt were placed on paid administrative leave after the shooting that left a 41-year-old man dead. The two officers were dispatched in the early morning hours July 8th to a report of a suicidal individual with a gun. When they arrived, they encountered two people near the location, and authorities say the armed suspect refused commands to put down his weapon. A female family member did follow the instructions. Body cam footage suggests responding officers gave loud verbal commands over the course of 8 minutes for Murphy to stop before the first shot was fired. From the Prairie Public Newsroom, I'm Todd McDonald.
There's nothing like lazily floating down the Missouri River on an August summer evening. A leisurely pace that sounds rather poetic, doesn't it? Kind of like a Plains Folk essay by Tom Easern. Join Prairie Public and Tom Easern for an evening cruise on the Lewis and Clark Riverboat and a reading from Tom's new book, Pacing Dakota, and discussion with the author. Sail with Prairie Public and Tom from the riverboat landing off of River Road near Keelboat Park in Bismarck Friday, August 10th from 8 to 9:30 p.m. There'll be a cash bar and gorgeous views. Tickets are $35. Hurry and reserve yours at prairiepublic.org. The deadline is Wednesday, August 8th, and the proceeds benefit Prairie Public.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Mark Trahant taught journalism at the University of North Dakota until June, when he left for Washington, D.C. to become the editor of Indian Country Today. He's a member of the Shoshone-Bannock tribes, and he shares commentaries in a blog he calls Trahant Reports. Today, his subject is the Farm Bill.
Regaining Our Future, a new report published by the Indigenous Food and Agriculture Initiative, says Native people are this continent's first agricultural people, deeply involved in complex systems and domesticating crops that are still eaten today. Of course, Congress won't be spending much time on that point, but the Farm Bill will shape how Indigenous people are fed. The bill's most important section for Indian Country deals with nutrition programs representing 80% of the legislation's cost. Janie Hipp, speaking at the Native American Journalists Association earlier this month, said many tribes depend on such programs to feed people, such as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. That was the original food stamps program, created in the 1960s as part of President Lyndon B. Johnson's War on Hunger. Regaining Our Future said nearly 25%, and in many communities, more than 50% of tribal citizens directly access or rely on federal feeding programs. There are two versions of the Farm Bill, one in the House and another in the Senate. The two houses will soon negotiate final language through a conference committee, and then that compromise must be enacted again by each body. The Senate has a bipartisan approach, especially in provisions that deal with Indian Country. while the House version of the Farm Bill only has support from Republicans. The House would cut nutrition funding from SNAP, and some 1.2 million adults would lose benefits because of the stricter work requirements, according to the Congressional Budget Office. The work rules mean states and tribes will have to set up an administrative structure to make this happen. And in some tribal communities, that will mean that jobs will have to be created because they do not now exist. The politics of this massive farm bill remain an open question. Last May, members of the House Freedom Caucus tanked their own party's measure in order to take a stand on immigration. And some of those House members are not keen on any nutrition programs. There is also a chance that Congress could pass a short-term extension of the farm bill. But that would move the contested issues, especially the fight over food stamps, squarely past the election and the prospect of a Democratic Party controlling the House. I'm Mark Trahant.
You can read and hear more of Mark's work at TrahantReports.com. Next on Main Street, Sue Balcom joins us to talk about zucchini.
Coming up this week on the Thomas Jefferson Hour, well, we're kind of all over the place, but we had great fun.
Paul McCartney, a documentary on John McCain, audio listener responses to this program, particularly with respect to music, and a man who drove from Sioux Falls, South Dakota to Bismarck, a distance of 6 hours, just to say hello.
And say hello we did, and included part of that in the show.
And conversations from our listeners about whether television is toxic or whether it's just another neutral medium.
And I introduce you to a special new friend of mine, Carol from Valley City.
The music teacher, Carol from Valley City. She's 83 years old. She's in a care facility for the moment because of a hip. She's a listener to the Thomas Jefferson Hour. And she said that she tells her students, when you stop learning, you're done.
Kudos to Carol. Join us for all that and more on this week's Thomas Jefferson Hour.
Sunday at 11 Central, 10 Mountain, right here on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton with Ashley Thornburg. We're joined by Sue Balcom of Root Cellars Farm near Mandan. Sue joins us from our studio in Bismarck. Hello, Sue.
Hi, guys.
You know, this time of year, I often think of that Garrison Keillor joke where he says the only time that Minnesotans and North Dakotans lock their car doors is during zucchini season, because people, your neighbors or whatever, just load up your car with it.
Have you found that to be true on your side of the state?
Yeah, but you know what? I'm not complaining. I love it, and I will eat it up.
I once grew zucchini, and I emphasize once. Just
well,
once.
How many seeds did you plant, might I ask?
Well, I don't know. Probably just a handful, but I had bounty, unbelievable bounty. Baseball bats in early September.
Yep, because there's one gal. She was a beginning gardener. And so she planted the whole packet of zucchini seeds. And she will never do that again, because you cannot get rid of them short of dropping them off in somebody's car when they're not looking.
So what should we do with all the zucchini once we've found it in our cars?
Well, if it's way, way big, then I used to write notes on it with a scriber. You know, I'd like write a thank you note or another little note on the skin and take it over and leave it on my neighbor's doorstep. We kind of had this little thing going back and forth. But the thing you have to know about zucchini is that it is a summer squash. So while winter squashes keep, summer squashes are watery and best eaten when they're tiny. So if you can get them before they go like nutso on you, they're really good raw. They have a very mild flavor. Kids usually can tolerate them because they do have such a mild flavor. But, oh, my gosh, I love sautéed zucchini. Put some onions in there, some green chilies, and then cover it with cheese and bake it in the oven for a few minutes. Oh, it's just divine that way.
But the challenge is finding them at that size, because they can be hidden by the foliage and they might grow about a foot a day. They're quite remarkable that way.
You know, they do. They do. I swear, they grow at least 6 inches overnight. So the key here is not to plant the whole pack of seeds, but plant one hill and then stand guard over it, because they are better when they're young. But if they do get to be too big, I have a recipe that I got from a little German lady for zucchini fruit bars. Now, while they never grew zucchini in their garden back in the day, I suppose maybe because it didn't keep well, or maybe it was like a foreign concept or something to those farmers. But that makes the best bar I've ever eaten in my life. It's got raisins and it's got kind of a brown butter topping with peanuts on it. And it's one way to disguise that zucchini so that your kids will eat it.
Yeah, boy, there's no shortage of baked goods out there, that, you know, with things like pancakes, waffles, something similar to a banana bread, you know, zucchini bread. It just shows up time and again as a great alternative. If you have too much of it that you can't possibly just eat it all, you know.
Well, you know, you can grate it and freeze it, which I've heard a lot of people do that. My new love, of course, is zucchini noodles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I bought a tiny little $10 spiralizer, and I put those noodles in noodle soup all summer long. Yeah, it'd still
How's
be called
you get to say zoodles?
Zoodles, there we go. It's amazing that they kind of hold together, and they take on this whole different texture, because zucchini will be like a chameleon, and it will adapt or take on the properties of whatever it's cooked with, which is why it's kind of versatile. People disguise it as hamburger in like lasagna dishes. I used to do pizza crust with it and egg bakes with it, and use it instead of ground beef in a lot of recipes. Even chili, you can use it kind of as a filler. But it's also awesome for you health-wise, so you should try to hide it into lots of different foods, even though, you know, if people find out about it, they sometimes don't like that you do that, but I'm known for that. So,
Sue, do you peel the zucchini, or do you like the peel?
You know, strictly out of laziness, I don't peel anything, carrots, potatoes, or zucchini. Well, okay, winter squash I peel. And then later on, I found out that that's the healthiest part of your vegetable. So if you get them young, I would not peel them. In fact, if you get them big and grate them for inside of something, I wouldn't peel them either. Now, I would caution you against knowing your farmer and knowing how they raise that zucchini would be very helpful. And I have a recommendation for everybody who wants to grow zucchini out there. I found a zucchini from Prairie Road Organics called Dark Star, and it's awesome because you can know if they're tiny and evenly shaped. These will stay that way for a lot longer than most of the zucchini I grew before. And this has like a beautiful dark, just almost nighttime looking skin on it. It's just gorgeous zucchini. And you can get it locally. It's a locally offered seed from Prairie Road, but it took 6 years to breed this particular zucchini to keep it uniform in shape. Because you've seen them, they do look like those big kids' baseball bats, you know? And that's when you want to grate them and throw the seeds away, because then that's when they develop seeds, and then the seeds get in the way of everything else you're doing.
Be very careful where you put those seeds.
Oh, yeah. I would, yeah. Right. Well, compost them or something, but don't be throwing them out in your yard. That's for sure.
Can you ever roast them like a pumpkin seed or a winter squash seed? Can you do that with summer squash?
I think they're too watery for that.
Okay.
You know, they come out kind of like a cucumber seed in the inside when a cucumber gets to be too big. But they are still, you know, they're so easy to grow, and they're such a good plant for a beginner gardener, as long as you remember not to plant more than one hill.
Well, they look so much like cucumbers that sometimes they're confused for them. Do they have common uses?
The cucumber or the zucchini?
Both. I mean, either
like,
or.
They share applications.
I have never pickled zucchini, but I do know that you can make zucchini apple pie if you want to hide it that way. So I would say no, now that I think about that a little bit more. I would not try. I wouldn't try pickling them. I think that there's enough other ways to hide a zucchini than in a pickle jar.
So look at the label very carefully in the store. That's
yes, very carefully in the store.
Okay. Well, we've checked out zucchinis. It's always a pleasure to talk with Sue Balcom of Ritzeller's Farm near Mandan. Thanks for being with us, Sue.
Thank you.
What's happening is next.
This week on Away with Words, we speak with another satisfied customer.
I want to thank you guys so much. My husband is from Wisconsin, so you've already helped us take care of the tump battle.
Oh, nice.
So that it is an actual, tump is an actual word, and a toboggan is both a hat and a sled.
Yes.
You bet.
Yeah, you are enlightened.
Which started many fights in our household.
Join us.
Root, little pig, or die.
That's Away with Words, Saturday at 9 Central, 8 Mountain, here on Prairie Public.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
Yeah, it's August. Summertime is a-wastin'. What is happening? Ashley Thornburg and I talk about this every Thursday, where we look at our What's Happening calendar of things to do.
And Keplin Fest is right at the top of my list for this week, and it starts tomorrow and also happens on Saturday in Belcourt at the Sunnyside Trails. This is the 7th annual Keplin Fest. This is 2 full days of music, dancing from traditional Métis performers, and so you'll see music and dance from them. There's also going to be craft and food vendors, and on top of all that, it is set in this beautiful natural area complete with lots of nature trails. This gets going 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday in Belcourt at Sunnyside Trails. It's called Keplin Fest, and it costs $25.
Muddy River Blues Society Music Festival is Saturday in Bismarck at General Sibley Park. For the past 6 years, the Muddy River Blues Society, MRBS, has hosted a free outdoor blues festival in August. This event is open to all ages and features 3 to 4 blues artists in years past. It showcased national and regional touring acts as well as local talent. The MRBS is scheduled to hold its 2018 free outdoor blues festival at the amphitheater in General Sibley Park and Campground in Bismarck Saturday from 2 in the afternoon until 8 in the evening. And again, it's free.
Cucumber Fest is this Tuesday, the 7th, in Fargo at the Growing Together Community Garden, which is down on 25th Street and 40th Avenue. So this is part of a Field to Fork Festival series, and the aim of the Field to Fork Festivals is to get kids, parents, other people just knowing a lot about healthy food and get excited about it and growing your own food. And this is going to have educational stations, garden tours, kids games, different recipe demonstrations and samples. And of course, cucumbers really coming in strong this time of year. So Cucumber Fest, Tuesday the 7th in Fargo on 25th Avenue and 45th Street, the site of the Growing Together Community Garden, 4 to 7 p.m., and it's free.
Well, nothing against Pickles the dog, but I like pickles that are made from cucumbers. Okay. Sunday history programs start August 5th at Fort Abercrombie at the State Historic Site. Featured the 5th at 2 o'clock will be Todd Holdman Band in concert, followed by Made in America from 3 to 4. That features Bob Gross, who's the owner of Dakota Vine Winery, representing the background of his new business, and farmer Jen Skoog of Family Roots Farm, discussing how she is following her dream as a farmer involved in beekeeping, gardening, and livestock. Now, also presenting at Fort Abercrombie State Historic Site on Sunday afternoon is Tom Ezern, well-known professor of history at North Dakota State University and well-known to Main Street listeners because he's got a brand-new book, Pacing Dakota. And that will be featured as well on that Sunday history program. And I should mention that Tom is also giving a reading this evening in downtown Fargo at Zanbro's Variety. That's at 6:30. He'll be appearing in Grand Forks Friday evening at Ferguson Books starting at 5 p.m. And at Fort Abercrombie Historic Site, I mentioned that Sunday afternoon, Tom speaks at 3 o'clock. So lots of history going on here.
D.W. Grothy performing Sunday the 5th in Jamestown at the Stutzman County Courthouse State Historic Site. Again, that is in Jamestown. And you are invited to attend a free concert with D.W. Grothy. He is a nationally known cowboy poet. He's going to be singing, playing guitar, and doing some original music and poetry. Again, on Sunday, August 5th in Jamestown at the Stutzman County Courthouse State Historic Site. It's at 1 p.m., and it's free.
The theory of relativity is, you know, a theory by Einstein, but it's more than that. It's a show. Thursday through Sunday in Fargo at NDSU's Askenaze Auditorium in Askenaze Hall. Combine a physics manual with the sound of the Book of Mormon, humor of the Big Bang Theory, and the theme of human connection, and the result is the critically acclaimed musical, The Theory of Relativity. It's unconventional and moving. It explores the notion that all people are intricately interconnected and that our personal journeys can have profound effects on those with whom we come into contact. Through songs and monologues, the ACT UP cast will create an array of characters whose lives intersect as they explore the unfolding mysteries and adventures in their lives. If you've not been to an ACT UP performance, these are very polished performances, and they're also very unique, very different. 7:30 this evening through Sunday. Again, this is at Askenaze Auditorium and Askenaze Hall at NDSU. The cost is $20 for students, $25 for adults.
Well, I will follow the current of the Red River North from that show to Disney's Beauty and the Beast in Grand Forks at the Empire Arts Center, starting on Tuesday and running through next weekend, so August 7th through the 11th. And this is, again, in Grand Forks at the Arts Center. I probably don't need to tell you the storyline of Beauty and the Beast. It's a famous story, and you can see it performed at 7:30, Tuesday through Saturday, and tickets are anywhere from $16 to $24. Again, Grand Forks at the Empire Arts Center.
Well, here's my pick of the week.
All right.
And I have a vested interest in this because I performed with this young woman, and she is remarkable. Women of Clay is the name of a brand new piece that was created by local actor Kate Arness. It opens this evening. It runs Friday and Saturday in Moorhead at, get this, the Heritage Garden and Amphitheater in Moorhead's Woodlawn Park. That's right, it's outdoors. This is an original adaptation of Greek myth, history, and folklore, which Kate Arness also directs. The performance is outside, as I mentioned, so you may choose to bring your own blanket or chair. Incense will be burned during the performance, and parental discretion is advised. So you've been forewarned. It's Women of Clay this evening, Friday and Saturday in Moorhead at 7 at the Amphitheater in Moorhead's Woodlawn Park, and it's free.
And my pick is the Northern Plains Oyate Traditional Powwow this Saturday the 4th in Williston at the Fort Union Trading Post. And this is part of the Indian Arts Festival at the Trading Post. And so you can see dancing and hear from descendants of Crazy Horse as they speak about their family's oral history. There's also going to be a raffle drawing and some food that will be served again 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. in Williston at the Fort Union Trading Post on Saturday, the Northern Plains Oyate Powwow, and it's free.
And that's what's happening.
Hey, do you have a guest idea, a comment, or a question? It's easy to contact us. You can email us at mainstreet@prairiepublic.org or on Facebook, we're Main Street at Prairie Public. Or you can call us toll-free, 888-755-6377. We want to hear from you.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Basin Electric Power Cooperative of Bismarck. Producing reliable electricity. Basin Electric operates generation stations in North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, and Wyoming, including wind farms in North and South Dakota.
This is Dakota Datebook for August 2nd. In 1878, Pastor Paul Thorlakson set out from the Gimli settlement in Manitoba, Canada, to find a new location for an Icelandic settlement. He traveled with 20 men on a steamboat to Winnipeg, and then on to Dakota in search of land in Pembina County. He would become known as the father of the Icelandic settlement in Dakota. One of the first explorers of Pembina County was Johann Peter Hallsson. He and his son Gunnar built the first Icelandic home in the new settlement. Named in his honor is an Icelandic church in Icelandic State Park and a cemetery at the church's original site nearby. There aren't as many Icelanders in North Dakota as there are Germans from Russia or Norwegians, but what they lack in numbers, they make up for in enthusiasm. Icelandic communities in North Dakota will celebrate the 119th Deuce of August celebration this year. Many people think the Deuce of August honors Icelandic independence from Denmark. That is not the case. Icelandic Independence Day falls on June 17th. John Sigurdsson was a patriot who worked hard to achieve Icelandic independence. In honor of his efforts, it's his birthday that is recognized as Icelandic Independence Day. But back to the Deuce of August. It was on this date in 1874 that the new constitution was presented to Iceland by King Christian IX of Denmark. The king asked all the churches in the country to hold services on August 2nd. The tradition spread to North America. The celebration came to Winnipeg in 1890, and by 1899, the tradition had spread to Pembina County. The Deuce of August is sponsored by the 7 member towns of the Icelandic Communities Association of Northeast North Dakota. The annual event is held in Mountain. The other communities are Gardar, Holsen, Vidalin, Fala, Thingvala, and Svold. It is the largest Icelandic festival in the country. People come from across the United States, Canada, and Iceland to participate. The North Dakota Tourism Department confirms that it is the oldest ethnic festival in the state. The town of Mountain, with a population of about 100, plays host to thousands of people every year. One of the most popular attractions is the Genealogy Center, staffed by Icelandic roots genealogists. Other activities include band concerts, street dances, car shows, a parade, and the sale of Icelandic souvenirs. Organizers stress that while some activities are familiar, they offer new things every year to keep the festival interesting. Today's Decoded 8-Book was written by Carol Butcher. I'm Errol Pepcorn.
Decoded 8-Book is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from the North Dakota Humanities Council.
The war in Afghanistan has gone on for nearly 17 years. Now the U.S. has reportedly met with the Taliban to discuss peace. Could these talks lead to the end of the longest war in American history? And what does the U.S. have to gain or lose?
Let's not forget, Afghanistan is where 9/11 came from. The Taliban and Al-Qaeda behind them haven't gotten any kinder or gentler in the interim.
On the next Morning Edition.
Friday on Main Street, the Red River Rainbow Seniors have been working on an oral history project titled Breaking Barriers, Harvesting LGBTQ Stories from the Northern Plains. It features stories from folks who grew up when being out was much more problematic. And on Friday, Dave Thompson always joins us for our weekly discussion about topics in the news, and Matt Olean reviews a new movie. Tomorrow it's Sorry to Bother You. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Friday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.